Thanks, Alan. And start the tape, John. And with that, it gives me great pleasure to introduce our first speaker this evening, Carl B.
Good evening. Wow, what an honour it is to be asked to speak here at the first London Primary Purpose Convention, and I'm absolutely terrified. I can assure you, it's the first time I've ever done anything like this with such a big crowd. But it really is an honour, and just to introduce myself, I'm Carl, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi, and I'll tell you a little bit about myself, and I'll try and. Tell you how I understand what the primary purpose is all about as well. I come from an alcoholic family. My mother and father are both alcoholics. My father died of complications involved with drinking. My mother's in recovery today, actually. Very early on, I can remember and seeing that drink caused trouble in my family. And I made a conscious decision in those days to never end up, like my parents, really. Little did I know that I'd end up, at the gates of insanity, in a lot of trouble, suffering from a serious spiritual malady, which nearly killed me. But I first started drinking when I joined a local rugby club, and it was fantastic. I absolutely loved what alcohol did to me. It lit me up. It took away the fears that I felt, and it made me the centre of attention. It enabled me, it put me at ease, and it made me feel very, very comfortable, and it was wonderful. And from those first few drinks that I ever took, I thought that I'm going to use this stuff to the best advantage. There's a possibility that I'd lost control in those very, very early days, but it was always that I'm in control. It was always that me in control. But if I look back at those early days of drinking, I can see that. A couple of drinks was never sufficient. I always had to drink more, and I understand today that that's that physical allergy to alcohol. If I drink alcohol, the phenomena of craving develops. I have to drink to get drunk to satisfy that craving, and in the early days of my drinking, that was only it would only be 3 or 4 pints, but it progressed. It developed. The illness developed within me. And sort of some good examples of that physical allergy to alcohol that Dr. Silkworth talks about in the big book in the doctor's opinion is I was at college on a day release with a good friend, and we'd go to the pub at lunchtime, and we'd have a couple of pints, and in the afternoon I just could not concentrate on my lectures. All I could think about was going back to the pub and drinking. But my friend just—he was fine. He'd have those drinks, and he could concentrate and get on with his lectures. And it was just impossible for me to do that. This was back in the early 90s, and so I realised then that I was physically different. I didn't think too deeply about it, and didn't understand it like I understand it today. But the next time we went to the pub, because I knew I had lectures in the afternoon, I wouldn't drink. And my friend would, say, "Come on, Carl, what's wrong with you? Why don't you have a couple of pints?" And I just couldn't do it. I just knew that if I had those 2 pints, you could forget about the course. If I'm drinking 2 pints every day I go to college, I'm just not going to get those lectures done. I just knew that. And that's before I ever started really getting into serious blackouts. That's even before I started getting into a lot of trouble. I had this, I was physically different to a normal drinker. And I understand that today. And the other part of the illness, as I understand it, is that mental obsession. very, very early on in my drinking career, I started to drink on a daily basis. I'd go down to the pub in the evening, and then I'd drink 3 or 4 pints. And I can see, I could even see at the time when I first started drinking that it wasn't too wise to be drinking on a daily basis. I wasn't stupid or thick. I could see on the news, and I even did an essay on it at college. The effects of alcohol, that that it wasn't too wise to be drinking on a daily basis. And I always said, well, tomorrow then I won't drink. And tomorrow I won't drink. And tomorrow I won't drink. And this went on for 15 years. You know, it really did. You know, such was that little subtle insanity just before, you know, that occurred to me every day. You know, I'd go to, you know, I'd drink on it, you know, every day. It was either in the pub or with friends or socialising, whatever it was, you know, I drank on a daily basis. And I think the only time that I didn't drink in those 15 years is when I had tonsillitis and I couldn't even hold water down, you know. If I could have held the booze down, I would have done. But I just, you know, I was too ill. So that you know, just shows you, you know, that mental obsession that I had, and it just went on and on and on. You know, for 15 years, the binges that, you know, maybe I was experiencing at the beginning of my drinking career, you know, three or four times a year, began to become monthly, and then they began to become weekly. And then those binges were every single time I picked up a drink. And, you know, the physical and mental suffering that I used to go through was pretty horrendous. And, you know, it never deterred me from drinking. So I went on. And I think, you know, it all came towards a head. My girlfriend, who I've seen at the time, suggested that I went to, you know, to do something about my drinking. And, you know, I realised that, you know, I was getting into more scrapes now, and, you know, I thought it was a good idea to do something. So I went via some agencies and the doctors and a psychiatrist and tried the controlled drinking route and even tried total abstinence. And I was even prescribed an anti-craving drug called Campril by a psychiatric nurse. And, you know, maybe I stopped drinking on a daily basis now. But at the weekends, you know, I'd pick up on a Friday and I wouldn't put down till a Monday or Tuesday. And, you know, after 4 months of making positive steps to do something about my drinking, you know, it all ended in more trouble than I'd ever been when I was a daily drinker, you know. And in those 4 months, it actually, you know, the illness progressed, even though I wasn't drinking on a daily basis now. You know, every time I picked up, it was just chaos. And it ended up with me being charged for drink driving 3 times in 3 months, getting suspended from my job. You know, by this time, my friends had stopped inviting me out and to social events because I was just a pest. And, you know, it was pretty horrendous. And, you know, during that time, you know, in some circumstances, I was actually discouraged by professional people from going to Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I was told by professional people that I wasn't an alcoholic. You know, I can remember vividly a psychiatric nurse who I paid privately to see me telling my mother and my uncle that I wasn't an alcoholic and that I shouldn't go to AA. You know, and whilst I wasn't completely honest with this guy, you know, I did tell him I was drinking between... I did tell him I was drinking between 100 and 150 units a week, you know. If that isn't alcoholic drinking, I don't know what is, you know. But there you go, you know. I do believe these people who I saw had my best interests at heart, but they clearly didn't have the experience of being an alcoholic themselves, which, you know, is the wonderful thing about Alcoholics Anonymous. after losing my job and being in looking at a prison sentence for my third drink driving offence, I went into a treatment centre, and it was at this treatment centre that I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I can remember going to my first meeting in Altrincham near Manchester and absolutely hating it. You know, I really didn't think I should be there. You know, I was in the treatment centre to hopefully help with a mitigation against a prison sentence. And I thought, you know, this is quite possibly the worst place. You know, it's game over. I'm in a meeting of AA. And I looked around the room and I judged everybody. And I hated them all. And in the treatment centre, it was a 12-step programme in the treatment centre, and I was introduced, you know, and I was told to get honest, and I was told to put action in, and you know, I just was not prepared to go to any lengths at this stage in my life, and that fear kept me, you know, encased in not being honest. You know, I just could not be honest. I felt that if I told anybody about how I really drank, that I'd just be completely rejected. And, you know, I had a very arrogant attitude. And for 4 months in AA, I attended lots of meetings and I kept picking up. I could maybe stay sober for 2 or 3 weeks was the sort of record that I attained, and then I'd pick up, and it'd just be worse than ever. You know, every time I picked up, it was worse than ever. I did hear people in the rooms talking about God, and it really did put me off. You know, I had no concept of a higher power, no idea about God, and I wasn't prepared to try. You know, I wasn't desperate enough yet. And you know, with that attitude in AA, you know, things got worse. I thought I was above making the tea. I thought I was below making the speeches. You know, I was between a rock and a hard place, and it was a horrible place to be. It was very, very scary. And I can remember waking up every time after a binge, thinking, "How did that happen again?" And you know, it was just horrendous. And I remember meeting somebody in a meeting, not too far from here actually, at Bexley, where I'd come down to work because I couldn't work in the Midlands anymore. Because, you know, I had quite a high-profile job and I'd made a real mess of things up there and couldn't get another job, so I had to come down south to help you lot out. And I was attending lots of meetings and picking up a drink, and it was just horrendous. And I can remember meeting somebody in at the Bexley meeting, and they gave me the telephone number, and said, "Why don't you give me a ring?" And after I'd had another binge, I did give this guy a ring, and he said to me, "Carl, I know exactly how you feel," and he said, "Have you tried praying?" And I thought, well, that's a pretty novel idea. You know, I'd heard people talking about it in AA, but no, you know, I'd had a couple of sponsors by this stage as well. I wasn't, you know, I didn't put any action in with these sponsors, but nobody had suggested to me that I tried praying before, and I didn't think at the time it was a particularly good idea. But after I'd been on another horrendous binge, an unplanned binge, you know, I really didn't want to end up in the trouble that I ended up in, and you know, I woke up absolutely desperate, and you know, I thought, and those words rang clear in my head, you know, get on your knees and pray, and that's exactly what I did. And that was the 29th of August 2001, and that's the last day I drank. The person that suggested that that I did that became my sponsor. I went into a treatment centre for the final time and came out with a firm resolution to get honest, you know, to be rigorously honest and to change. And I knew it was through the 12 steps that I'd change. And, you know, I went to see the guy that had offered to sponsor me. And, you know, he made it very, very clear to me that it was up to me to put the work in. But he'd helped me all the way. And that was the beginning of my recovery. And it's just been a wonderful, wonderful journey. It really, really has. Through desperation, this is, you know, it wasn't one day that I woke up with a great idea. It was one day I woke up absolutely desperate. And I've woken up desperate many, many times before after these binges. But this time I did something different, and the difference this time was getting on my knees and praying. And I prayed to a God I had absolutely no concept of, you know, no faith in. Well, tiny, tiny bit of faith this time. That you know, clearly was a little bit of faith this time, because what I did was put that little tiny bit of action in. And that desperate prayer, you know, over 4 years ago, I believe has proved to me to be the loving hand of God. You know, I believe that today that I'm a recovered alcoholic. You know, that mental obsession that can condemn me to drink when I just didn't know when it would strike, you know, it has been removed. Very, very early on in my recovery, there was a couple of shaky moments when, you know, I wanted to drink. You know, the madness was upon me, if you like. And on each of those occasions, I prayed and I didn't drink. You know, and that's the difference, I believe, for me. You know, I made contact with this power that I'd never, ever made contact with before in my life. And that's what kept me sober. My sponsor took me through the steps. And, you know, and through the steps, I had a spiritual experience. It wasn't a profound, you know, it wasn't one which happened, you know, a flash of blinding light or anything like that. I had a profound personality change which occurred over a matter of months, and still is it, you know, I believe it's still happening to me now. I believe that I'm changing all the time. I'm changing from the person that walked into Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I'm growing every day as I put action in every day. And it's a wonderful, wonderful journey. And you know, I hope people come away from this convention maybe understanding a little bit more about our primary purpose, and maybe understanding a little bit more about how to get better, how to stay better, how to sponsor people, and go away with hope and faith. You know, and those are the wonderful things that I've gained from Alcoholics Anonymous is hope and faith, because you know I walked into AA absolutely hopeless, with no faith in myself and no faith in life really, and I have those things in my life today. You know, the 12 steps have undoubtedly made massive changes in my life. I was 6 months sober when I took the suggestions of my sponsor and I 12-stepped my mother. And she's in recovery today. She's 4 years sober. She sponsors people. She's in service. You know, the changes in my life, not just in me, are just massive, just enormous. And it's powerful stuff. You know, these 12 steps are powerful stuff. And to tap into that power, it's through the 12 steps that I've tapped into that power, no other way. You know, I've not tapped into that power by praying to God, reading the Bible and going to church. I've tapped into that power by doing the 12 steps. It's just as simple as that. You know, I have great faith in that power today. And I believe that this power is available to each and every one of us. You know, you do the 12 steps with honesty, open-mindedness and willingness to put the action in, you will have a spiritual experience and your faith will grow. You know, my faith is powerful today. You know, my faith is over 4 years old. My faith is because I put the action in on a daily basis. You know, my sponsor not only has taken me through the steps, you know, he's also given me lots and lots of advice on my growth and maintenance of the spiritual experience that I have. And if there is anybody in the room who's new and doesn't understand, you know, all this mumbo jumbo talk about the word, you know, spiritual, which I keep mentioning, you know, don't be put off by the word spiritual. You know, I didn't understand the word spiritual until I experienced it, and spiritual for me is keeping in touch with that higher power, and helping others. I understand very, very clearly what my primary purpose in Alcoholics Anonymous is today. You know, it's to stay sober and help others. It's just as simple as that. And you know, it's wonderful. I've been sponsoring guys for about 3 years now. I got my first sponsee when I was 12 months sober, and he's sober today. And actually, I don't know whether he's in the crowd today, but he's going to be down later for the convention. And to play a very, very small part in somebody else's recovery is such an honour and such a wonderful thing. You know, we're not sponsoring him anymore, but you know, we're good friends today. I think I've sponsored about 20 men in the last 3 years, and I would say probably 10 of those people are still sober today and are enjoying a good recovery. And you know, it's a wonderful, you know, it's wonderful to be a part of that and to help other people and see them get better. And that's all part of my, that's all part of my spiritual path. That's what keeps me in touch with that higher power. Is working with others. You know, part of my program is daily prayer, but you know, the most powerful thing for me is the work that I do with other people. You know, I'm a recovered alcoholic, and you know, if I work with other people, that recovery just gets stronger and stronger, I believe. You know, AA to me is just you know, it's a bridge to normal living. I have a wonderful life outside of Alcoholics Anonymous as well. I have a good job. I'm a driving license back now. You know, I have good friends and relationships with family are all wonderful because I've repaired them through the 12 steps. You know, if it wasn't for the 12 steps, you know, I don't know how I would have approached these people. And a good example of that is two of my best friends told me I wasn't invited to their wedding about 5 years ago. You know, through the steps, you know, I repaired that relationship, and they asked me to be godfather of their daughter, which was such an honour and such a wonderful thing for somebody who thought that those things in life just weren't available to him. You know, I was such a hopeless drunk, full of fear and resentment. that fear and resentment is manageable today, you know, through the 12 steps. You know, I know how to manage my resentments today. I can see how what an angry person I used to be. I can see how I was crippled by fear, and you know that fear is slowly being replaced with a faith. You know, and that's not just a faith in my higher power. It's a faith in myself, and it's a faith in other people. You know, when I came into AA, you know, I hated myself, and I didn't trust anybody. And you know, today I feel like a normal person. You know, I can go about my business, whether it's in AA or outside of AA, and I just feel like an ordinary guy. And you know, that is a life beyond my wildest dreams to me, to be able to enjoy peace of mind and to get on with my life and get on with other people. Is just an absolute joy, and it's all thanks to AA. You know, I'm very, very grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous, the 12-step program, and my sponsor, who's put so much, you know, effort into my recovery as well. And I'll just repeat. You know, I believe this is available to anybody who's willing to put the action in. You know, get yourself a sponsor, get stuck into these steps, get yourself a home group, get into service, and you too can have exactly the same experience that I've had, or even better. You know, I'm sponsoring guys now, and they're getting recovery very, very quickly, and they're getting better recovery than I had. You know, in my early days, you know, I was cautious and I took my time. I've got sponsees now getting through the steps in a matter of months, in fantastic recovery. And you know, I'd like to give a big shout out to if there's anybody in the crowd that knows me, and a few other people that have come down with me today. You know, it's such an honour and a wonderful to be part of other people's lives, and you know that's what it's all about. You know, I clearly understand what my primary purpose is today. I go to Alcoholics Anonymous to do service, to carry the message, and hopefully pick up, you know, a guy to work with. You know, I don't go to Alcoholics Anonymous to dump my problems. I don't go to Alcoholics Anonymous to for a social life. You know, I understand that primary purpose, and you know, I don't want to get too controversial about AA, but you know, there clearly is, you know, a big proportion of people in AA who don't understand that primary purpose, and you know, a lot of people try and carry this message and this program by word of mouth, and things get watered down that way, and that's why, you know, that's, you know, one of the main reasons why the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous was written. You know, this is my understanding from reading Language of the Heart, you know, Bill Wilson's writings in the Grapevine. You know, the book was written for that purpose of the message not getting misinterpreted. And we have a message today which is misinterpreted. You know, people, you know, have got a watered down message. And you know, I personally believe that we're turning the tide, though. You know, I think there's pockets of recovery around today. All over the country and even all over the world, and it's wonderful to see that, and wonderful to be a part of that. And you know, I think we're just about coming up to time, so I'll leave it there. I'll thank you all for listening to me. I hope people go away from here with some hope and some determination to carry this message, and thanks for listening to me. Thank you.
Thanks, Carl. We're going to have a short break, 15 minutes. Seated again for 8:30, okay, guys? Thanks.